Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsor.
Every day is like a blank page. Some people encounter the page with fear and dread. Others encounter it with potential and excitement. Hello, my name is Aubrey Baptista. At Kindred Art Therapy, you will learn to be inspired daily rather than approaching each day with fear. For more information, visit arttherapync.com to book a free 15-minute consultation. Welcome to Kindred Conversations, the show where we shine a light on local mental health professionals who are the unsung heroes of our community. Join us as we delve into their journeys, strategies, and the art of healing minds. Together, we'll break down stigmas and celebrate resilience. Today, I have joining us a good friend of mine from grad school, Alin Davis, who is a clinician here in North Carolina. She's an expressive arts therapist, and she worked for over 8 years with individuals with eating disorders. So this will be the first time that we have someone who specializes in that specific area here to talk more with us about the type of work that she does, how she got into that, and really what lights a fire for her. Welcome, Alin.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me today, Aubrey. I feel very honored and privileged to be here with you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Yeah, it's funny. Last week we had a Leslie grad on too, and I just happened to meet her through networking and through this show and all of that. And she joined, and it just so happened that she graduated 2 years before us at Leslie. So it was a really funny coincidence.
That is cool. That's awesome. I love meeting Leslie grads, especially since we're here and that's so way up there, you know? It's like, cool.
Yeah, yeah. I run into a lot of grads here from like Lenore Ryan in Western Carolina and just like some of the more local places. And so it's really cool when you run into someone that from a college that most people don't even know about down here.
Exactly. They're like, you went to where? It's by Harvard. That's what I always say. And they're like, oh, like, it's not like Harvard, but it's by Harvard.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was something really cool when we were there is getting to just like, you know, walk by Harvard and be like, oh, there's Harvard.
Yeah, no, it really was. I mean, Cambridge is a great little town, I think. It had a lot of character. I enjoyed it for sure. Yeah, and I think Leslie had a great campus too, to be honest. Like, they have gorgeous. I always felt like we were kind of on the Harry Potter like scene, in some of those on that one main campus with the beautiful old church and things. That was always so pretty. So.
Yeah, I just loved getting to longboard into schools.
Yeah, yes, you did do that. I always was so like impressed with that, actually. I was like, God, she can skateboard? That's so cool.
Yeah, it's part of how I stim seek, you know, is like doing extreme kind of sports, you know.
Oh, that's it. That's awesome. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. So tell me about, you know, since you've gotten into practice, you've mostly been working with women. You have done some teenagers, but that's really not the area where you're concentrating. You really like working with the women who, you know, are going through like body image types of stuff.
Things like that. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting that I ended up kind of, I feel like, I don't know if led or fell into this area. I never went to school thinking, oh, I'm going to go be a counselor for eating disorders. And honestly, while I was going through grad school and looking at internships and things, anytime I mentioned eating disorders, everybody's like, oh my God, you want to do that? Like, those are the hardest. They're so, you know, and I was like, really? So what essentially happened is my internship in our third year, I needed to find a place that would acknowledge and accept expressive arts therapy. And for some reason, eating disorders clinics here in particular seem to be a little bit more knowledgeable and open to that practice. So I actually, first I interviewed with Renfrew, which is a national center that most people have heard that name. And they actually did extend me an offer. And then I ended up at a different center that was actually a Medicaid-based center because they had a music therapist on staff there that could supervise me. So that's how I ended up there. And
Really quick, is that how it works with the expressive arts? Is that you can really be supervised by any expressive arts therapist, like a music therapist or an art therapist or.
At least that was what they said. They said as long as they have one of the modalities that he was board certified and trained in.
Oh, that's really cool. So you were supervised by a music therapist.
So that was really fun. I learned a lot from him, and yeah, it was good. It was really good.
Yeah. Just to kind of give people some background, right? So there's like different modalities within the expressive therapies world, and Alin specifically concentrates in expressive arts therapy, which is more of like a multimodal type of approach where there's like art, music, dance, Santre, writing, different modalities where there's.
Psychodrama, which is my favorite.
Oh, yeah. And I want you to talk more about that really quick, but the difference that I'm saying is that with mine, I'm a registered art therapist. It's heavily concentrated just in visual arts. So my specific modality really dove into that, whereas for you, it's a much more like multimodal approach. So tell us more about psychodrama.
As you said, there's different modalities, and one in the creative arts therapy is psychodrama, which is kind of like drama therapy, but it's a little different. It was created by Dr. Murano. I can't remember I'm really bad with dates, but years and years ago. And it probably, I would say, is one of the most powerful modalities I've ever worked with for trauma healing, because you are acting out, or you're watching people act out your story, and you can change your narrative and be a witness to it or be witnessed.
I
And
can imagine that being like so overwhelming for some people.
yeah, well, absolutely. So you definitely have to know what you're doing if you're going to do this type of work, because it can go deep really, really fast. So there is things that you can do within it that's more of like a warm up, right? You would want to have warm ups to even doing the type of psychodrama that you might do. And you also have to have really a cohesive, if you're going to do it in a group setting, because it really works best in a group, because you need sometimes multiple characters. You really have they have to really be bonded, I feel like, as well, and really honor each other and trust each other's about, that, because it's very vulnerable, right? You can get very, very vulnerable. But I also use it individually, and it may look more like what we call like the empty chair method, where you either, use a chair that you would maybe visualize someone in front of you and talk with them. Or you can also like change places with that person so that you can get like greater insight and empathy maybe for that person, or have conversations that maybe you've never been able to have or don't think you ever could have. So I've just seen it's just an it is intense, but I also just it's beautiful to watch, because I haven't ever seen anybody come out of it not changed to some degree.
Yeah, that it's an incredible approach. So, and then how does that fit in with like the body image, eating disorder type of stuff that you work on with people?
Sure. Well, I've utilized that, especially with like speaking to different p body parts, dialoguing maybe with that part, especially if you're really struggling to accept it. I've used it obviously in groups as well, just for cohesion, for a lot, therapeutic alliance, getting people to see each other's stuff in a way that's maybe more playful, or obviously it's very intimate.
Yeah, I had a person on a while back, and I'll have to try to remember. She was on one of the episodes and talking about internal family systems, and maybe Aaron, you can look to see who that was talking about internal family systems. And yeah, I didn't know anything about it, but she came on and she talked all about it. And I was like, that we do that. We do that in art therapy.
I know.
Art therapy. Like, why do I need a certification?
Right. Right. That's so funny. I've been delving into some IFS training recently for myself, just reading, you know, some of the books, and I really love that whole theory and the use of that. And you're right. It's so easy to use the arts to interact with these different parts, or I've also heard it said as ego states. So, you know, and so I've actually kind of framed it more like that with my clients when I'm usually working with it, is like kind of inner child work / ego state, you know? So when we're triggered, usually some part of us that was formed at some part in our life, right? Which is the ego state that could have been created, say like your 3-year-old self, maybe was the first time that you felt your deepest shame. That is usually the part that we're dealing with at the point that you're triggered. And so it kind of gives us context and also a way to visualize and become way more compassionate, for these parts and do what we call like reparenting them.
Mm-hmm. I talk about that with people a lot too, reparenting.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that work so much. Because actually, you know, related to eating disorders, most of the eating disorder stuff, yes, there is body image. Yes, there's food issues. Obviously we have to address those. But there, a lot of this is based in trauma that's occurred, you know, or family system that, you know, your attachment style is a certain way because of how your family worked. And so then I use this parts work in a way to help them kind of like reparent them, talk more compassionately to them. And even like the eating disorder is a part, it's not a whole, right? Like, I think that's important too about externalizing this quote unquote disorder, which is technically what I call a safety behavior, because you're really trying to survive and protect yourself when you utilize the eating disorder. And then you're able to like separate that out, right, from who you are though, because that's not the whole of them, right? That's just it's almost more just like a tool in a sense that they've used, and so it's been a really great way to kind of just frame that for people.
Yeah, and I think that this is really a relatable thing, because I think a lot more people may not be qualified as having an eating disorder, but I think that a lot of people really struggle with disordered eating. Mm-hmm. And I know for myself, like when I am experiencing different variations and levels of stress, then it triggers me to want to like eat more. Mm-hmm. And what I realize is that like if I'm having extra cravings for like sweets and sugars and things like that, that really is like my body telling me that there's something like wrong, like your body is dysregulated and you need to go back inwards. You need to center yourself.
Yes.
Like this was happening to me yesterday, and I went to yoga last night and I feel incredible today because like I was actually able to center and ground and like
absolutely
bring myself back in. And today I feel so much more in control of like my eating and my behaviors and things like that because like I feel more grounded, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's why having actually a somatic practice that you just include in your daily routine for your mental health, it's like, I kind of talk to my patients about it like this. I'm like, I'm going to give you a prescription and it's not going to be, you know, it's not a pill. So you don't have to, you know, go get it, but it's like a pill that you can take at any time, right? So that means if your meditation, your mindfulness practice, your somatic practice being like yoga or exercise of any sort, right? Your sleep hygiene and your eating are all the basis for a really, really stabilized mental health. So even if I'm not working with you because you may have not come to me, because I do a lot of women's issues, period, right? Like I've perinatal mood disorders. I've worked with a lot of women that have gone through abuse, maybe leaving their abuser, going through divorce or a huge, you know, maybe a life transition with like a job or even just having maybe the mixing of a family, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe they're blending families and learning about becoming a step parent. That's really where I start is like, what does your sleep look like? What does your eating look like? You know, what are you doing for yourself to get movement in? Mm-hmm. And then we can explore the other things, right? Once we kind of tackle that.
Yeah, because, and we've talked about this in other episodes as well, like somatic really just means it's like body-based. What are the physical things that you're doing to take care of yourself? Because that really is the foundation of your mental health.
Mm-hmm. And so, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so just making sure that those things are in order. And those things are the things that people have a really hard time prioritizing. You know, I start getting into it with people about like their worthiness around self-care and feeling like their self-care is indulgent, right? And being taught that they don't deserve to be able to take care of themselves. They have all of these other things that they need to take care of first, right?
Yes, which is essentially why they're depleted, right? Because they're always giving and not filling their cup up, right? I have to do a lot of that too, really encouraging them to understand that it's not selfish to self-care, mm-hmm. right? That actually you're being selfish if you're not, is how mm-hmm. I kind of frame it. Because if you want to show up well for others, if you're depleted, you really can't. You don't have anything to give.
And you know what? I personally really struggled with this. Like, to me, going through grad school and hearing them constantly say self-care, just to me, it sounded like a buzzword.
Yes.
And every single time I tried to do it, I felt so much shame that, like, it was really difficult for me to, like, want to get into it. And so it's taken me years to, like, finally realize, like, the only way that I can show up for others and to really be able to be the best mom, to be the best therapist, to be the best version of myself of all of these things is for me to be able to, you know, I explained it to a client yesterday like this. It's like, if you have a lamp and the lamp is covered in muck and dirt, then how is that light going to be able to shine for people to see, for them to be able to be attracted to you? You have to shine your lamp. You have to really like take care of that lamp that is yourself in order for your light to be able to shine the brightest and for people to be attracted to you.
That's a great, I love that analogy. I'm going to probably use that. I love that a lot, actually. Yeah, and something I think I talk a lot about too, when we boundaries of time and saying no more often than yes, because I think that is another basis for self-care. I know that when I started learning about self-care, same kind of time that was in grad school, but I also had started to learn it as becoming a mother. And I went to this mom's group and they would talk about this self-care, and they did the analogy that I think a lot of people have probably heard is, you know, if the airplane's going to wreck and the oxygen mask comes down, who do you put it on first? You know, you're supposed to put it on yourself so then you can help your child or whoever else. And the thing is sometimes we have to allow for that time, and it is hard, especially in the mom. I mean, I can't tell you how many women struggle with especially becoming a mom and feeling like they have to be the end all be all, the everything, the super mom. And I'm a single parent, so that almost is harder for me to not want to take on that role. So I had to learn, like, sometimes I have to say no, I actually schedule in self-care a lot of times. So I can just like I've started doing pottery this last year. That was it's been so much fun. And so like, I just schedule it in, you know, it's like every Tuesday night from this time to this time, that's my time no matter what, you know? And then I also, again, back to your bot, listening to my body and not feeling bad that like, maybe I need to take a nap. Or maybe I really need to actually just not do anything today.
Yeah. And what I tell people is, like, a lot of people are not used to listening to their bodies. So you have to actually consciously check in with your body, you know? So maybe even when you start out, that means that you're, like, setting reminders on your phone to do a 1 minute mindfulness so that you can just keep them breathing and checking in.
One of the practices I love to share is, like, body scans, you know, and, like, rating yourself throughout the day, right? Like, when you wake up in the morning, on a scale to 0 to 10, you know, where are you at? And this means, like, regulation, right? Like, in your body. And then after, then do a body scan, right? It's just a taking a moment just to start at the top of your head, you know, go through your body, pay attention to any, you know, colors, any tight, any tension, any discomforts, and then come back to yourself and then do that periodically throughout the day. So then you can start to really also understand more about what your baseline is. Because I think a lot of people, when we're trying to work with them, because we've all experienced trauma. I mean, I don't know one client that I work with that hasn't. That is so important for them to understand, like, okay, this is where I feel good, and this is where I'm dysregulated. And until they don't, you know, until they have that knowledge, they really can't do the work a lot of times they need to do.
So. Listen, living in... And we don't have to get into this. I know we're at the end of our episode, but I'm just going to drop this comment and then we're going to go, right? Is that living in a capitalist society is inherently traumatizing.
Yeah. I call it emotional inflammation that we live in. That's what I call it.
Yeah. All right. Ellen, where can we find more information about you?
Awesome. Yeah. My website is my name, ellendavis.com. That's ellendavis. And I have a Lynn Davis on Instagram and a Lynn Davis page on Facebook. So you can find me at any of those places. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And for those of you listening, you can find out more information about our show on bizradio.us.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.